All right, well, welcome everybody to Three Peas in a Pod. That's three local pastors doing a podcast. What a clever name. Man, we did it. We did it.
Yeah.
We said our mission at the outset was to encourage the local church to follow Jesus together. And so that's our hope and endeavor from this. And I'm Justin of Peninsula Grace Church, P number one, if you will, joined by P number two, Adam Myers of Kenai Christian Church.
That's the one.
I completely obliterated that last time. So, hey, my apologies to you and your people.
It's all good, man.
When you were
it happens. We hear that often, actually. That's okay.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe like getting confused with Kalafonsi Christian Center, like those kind of. But when I was introducing you, I said Kenai Christian Center, and then you're like, it's Adam Myers. And it's actually Kenai Christian Church, and I just kept right on going. I didn't even hear you. I didn't hear someone.
Well, sometimes what we have is we're the other KCC. We hear that a lot. It's like, oh, you're the other KCC. Yeah, okay, good. As long as you show up here and we're getting longer, fine, you know.
Okay, why can't they be the other KCC?
Man. Well, I imagine they have the same conversations over there.
There you go. And the last shall be first, anyway.
Exactly.
That's good. And then we got P number three, Andrew Miller of Sterling Baptist Center. Welcome, Andrew.
I got P3.
That's and it's not spiritual ranking or anything. I thought about categorizing us by like total salary or something, and I didn't.
That could get awkward.
Yeah.
Well, the last shall be first, so I'm fine with being the third. That's okay.
There you go, man. That's really spiritual of you. We're coming to you live on Zoom. We do hope to be face to face soon. As we know, we're rephasing back in. Somebody's listening to this 10 years from now. They're going to be like, what in the world are they talking about? We will have to work on, it's actually easy to record like this. When we're face to face, we're going to have to work out some microphone kinks, but I am looking forward to being, in a distance where I can actually breathe your guys' same air.
There you go. I think we need to incorporate like Buffalo Wild Wings as we're doing the podcast too. Just have a plate of wings in front of us.
Oh man, now you're talking. You just got upgraded. You just got upgraded to P number one.
All right.
So this podcast has multiple formats because we're so fancy. You can go. We have an audio feed where you can go onto iTunes or you know whatever place you listen to your podcast and just search Three Peas in a Pod, or the video format that's on YouTube. Obviously, if you're listening to this right now, you've done one of those, but the other one is also available. And this is our second episode. We launched our inaugural show last month. We're hoping to do it on a monthly basis. That's kind of our goal. We'll see how that goes. And last time we talked about how to church in a pandemic. And other than butchering Adam's church name, how did we, any feedback that you guys got? Did anybody listen at all?
Yeah, I had people got back to me and said they'd listened, and you know, probably the thing they were most encouraged by, they said, man, that's so cool to see three pastors getting together and coordinating, you know, how cool is that, you know? And they said, I just wonder what kind of impact that's going to have on our community. And I thought, wow, they're actually thinking outside just the podcast of, you know, here are three pastors who are going to have an impact in their congregations, but also, you know, have this sense of community, sense of togetherness. So that was some of the feedback I'd received after the last podcast.
Yeah.
I'd received, I mean, same stuff. And I posted it to where our church could access it. And we had several folks actually listen to it. And all positive feedback. In fact, I think that there was an individual that said that there was someone that was connected, I think, Justin, to your guys' church that used to be a part of our church back in the day, a youth pastor or something. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, there was just encouragement that there's actually some camaraderie, because I think that it's easy for you know us to go, well, we're on the same team, but then it really.
Yeah,
so I think this is helpful for the broader body to embrace some camaraderie. So I got a lot of positive feedback, all positive feedback.
Yeah,
and everyone liked lead by example.
Everyone liked my cup too. So
yeah, man, I gotta get something like that. I need a prop.
Go Orioles.
I saw that on your back wall. I forgot that they were even around.
I had
an Orioles hat when I was a kid. I think I got it from like Salvation Army or something. And I was like, oh, I don't even know how to say it. So
they won the World Series the year before I was born. So that's exciting.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, the guy you're talking about, a friend of mine, it was originally a youth pastor at Sterling Baptist, then was also a youth pastor here at Peninsula Grace, and referenced back in the day when he was youth pastor at Sterling, and they were not allowed to do a sledding party with our church because they were not Baptist. And, you know, just talking about how sweet it was to see three guys laughing with each other, yeah, encouraging each other from those different places, just was specifically healing and encouraging for him. And so, yeah, it's sounds like even going beyond the scope of some of what I had hoped. So we'll take it.
I just wonder why he didn't apply for a job over here at Kenai Christian Church as a youth minister. So
exactly.
Well,
could have closed the triangle.
I might not be sitting here if that were the case.
That's right. That's right. So good thing he didn't. You know, and that is our hope, that we, you know, we said three peas in a pod, and some of that is a nod to, and we're three guys in a similar situations as pastors of local churches here in Kenai, and that we're all ultimately on the same mission, that we know, that we, you know, as long as we're following the same Jesus, we're going to be better together. You know, I'd heard someone, a little cheesy, but saying, you know, it's a difference between a raindrop and a river, and how much more power there is when we're all working together, moving in the same direction. And so it's been a sweet thing to get to know you guys a little bit, and hopefully it's been an encouragement to others. So just kind of checking in, we are, gosh, I know we just had, I believe it was week 8 that we were churching online, which is pretty crazy to think it's already been that long, 2 full months. So how are you guys doing? You, your family, your church? Andrew, let's start with you. How's things going, buddy?
I think I lost track of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were sitting out at the breakfast table today, and we were talking about a gash that's in the drywall in our house. And we were trying, I was like, yeah, it just happened a couple weeks ago. Talking about one of the kids. It was just, my wife's like, no, that happened like 2 months ago. I was like, really? So I think I lost track of time, but I'm really glad that the sun's out, we're playing outside, we're getting flowers planted, and we're doing some vegetables, and the kids are biking, and they keep the bears away. I'm telling you, there's like a mama bear out there with a couple cubs. They're like, don't go into the Miller yard. Stay away from those boys. But we're enjoying the outdoors. So we're doing all right. But we are looking forward to being able to be around with more people, at least outdoors. We love to play soccer, that kind of thing, just run around with other people. So we're doing all right. But we're anxious for things to begin to ease up.
Yeah, things that must have really slowed down if you're talking about marks in your drywall. That's
not a mark, a gash.
A gash.
Gash.
Right. Who's to blame? It's nose ghost. Wasn't me. Oh man. Adam, how about you, man?
Yeah, I'm same boat. You know, I've lost track of time. You know, I wake up and think I have a meeting this evening, and my wife reminds me it's a totally different day, and I'm like, I'm at a loss. You know, thankfully there's some, as we're going to talk about later, some rhythms to life that help keep things on track. But yeah, with them all disrupted right now, it's been a steep learning curve, you know. But as far as personally, trying to just take advantage of the time that we do have as a family together, we bought some mats to put down in our living room because we all do, my boys and my wife and I do jujitsu, as I said before. And so we're just totally taking advantage of the jujitsu in the house, which is really good. But my son, Bo, he's convinced he's going to make an in-ground pool in the backyard. And so you just let him run with it, right? But he tied up a tarp the other day and filled it up about 6 inches deep. I think it was just 2 days ago. And he got in the water. He's like, oh, it's really cold. I'm like, come in and try it out, Dad. I'm like, no, no thanks. I mean, you're true Alaskan. I'm still got the Midwestern in me.
Right. So. Oh,
but it's going good, you know? Hmm.
Yeah. Well, now I feel like I'm behind. Last time Andrew said they're playing soccer indoors, you guys are doing indoor jujitsu. Like Jill and I need to, like, I don't know, set up at least like a badminton net or something. We need to keep up.
Badminton.
No, I agree. I think there is a general weariness. We were talking before we recorded, and there was an initial novelty to this whole thing and an uncertainty, but now it's kind of slipped into a little frustration and even just sensing a sense of like just kind of jadedness from our people and just kind of collectively frustrated but ready to move on. And so really just, you know, just having to say, Lord, you know, sustain us, endurance and patience in a difficult season. But the weather is nice. I mean, to be able to, you know, Jill and I have been out hiking a little bit, went Skelak Lookout Trail last Monday, and
nice.
I had my hip surgery, got my other hip replaced in January, and just this last week was able to start incorporating some jogging. So out running a little bit in the neighborhood and getting my Rocky music on in my headset. I'm ready to ice, ready to be somebody.
Adrian.
That's right. So, you know, we're making it. We hope you guys are too, praying for everyone out there in our churches and in this area. And, you know, last show, we talked about how to church in a pandemic. And this week, this show, maybe it's the pastor thing. Like, have you ever done, like, you do an evening service or something like that? And you're like, good morning, church. And you're like, okay.
Yep.
Oh, old habits die hard. But this week, we wanted to talk about weekly rhythms. Again, we want to encourage pastors and church members alike, and just people in general as they listen. And each of us, we have 24 hours every day. We each have 7 days in a week. And so the question is, how do we manage our time well in a way that glorifies God, stays on mission, making disciples, loving God and loving other people? And, you know, I thought it was funny when I thought about this topic, I was like, in some ways, this is a weird time to bring this up. You know, there are no normals right now. Everybody's schedule is, you know, disordered and chaos, chaotic. But in some ways, it's a perfect time to reassess, you know, as things are being shaken up and we're having to ask ourselves, you know, what, you know, looking back at what we had been doing. And then as we look forward to integrating back into some more regular rhythms, maybe there's some things that don't need to come back in, or maybe there's some new things that should stay in, or whatever it might be. So I think it is a good time for us to pause and reflect, you know, on kind of how we spend our time. And so each of us, you know, had a question that we brought to each other to think about beforehand, because this can't all be extemporaneous. my question was, we'll start here. What is a reasonable or healthy, expectation from our church family? We think about, as pastors, we're calling people into things all week, different kind of programs and gatherings and, you know, Bible readings and whatever it might be. And so the way I asked it was reasonable and healthy, knowing that people are on a full spectrum of where they're at and their lives. And then, you know, as far as, especially thinking about like church participation and rhythm, and sort of my sub questions were how do we prioritize the main things, you know, maybe have to weed out some of the things that are not as central. And then of course, you know, we are going to need to model that ourselves. So maybe Adam, starting with you, what were some of your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, when we dive into this podcast, we pick like the Achilles heel of me right out of the gate, because this is like my worst area of expertise, because I know we have 24 hours in a day and 7 days a week, but I try to work as if there's about 30 hours in a day and 10 days in a week. And, and I know you guys totally relate to that. And so, you know, I think where I start with all this is, you know, back in the day, you know, church was such an important part of society and culture that it really set the tone for what the rest of the week looked like. For example, if you go back to even when I was in, I know this is a long time ago, in middle school, elementary school, sometimes a little bit even into high school.
Black and white.
Exactly. So you go back to those days and you see that things were closed on Sundays. You know, you couldn't even go to the store because they were closed. Why? Well, because there was a general respect and understanding of having some time spent with God. And then as those things eased off, stores would be open, but then they'd have, you know, you couldn't buy alcohol on Sunday. So there's like these slow integrations of a shift in culture. And even you think about sports, with whether you're doing it in school or out of school, there was a respecter of Wednesday nights. There's a respecter of Sundays and the weekends. And if you look at our culture today, none of that's true anymore. And so as I think as the church, what we've done is we've brought in the old mentality and the old rhythms of our culture. And we've kept so many parts of our services as if we function under a society that cares. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, so our church members, our youth, our children, our adults, they live in a completely different culture. And yet we're going to try to take an old culture of, when church would even be available to people and expect them to be there. Which again, I don't think is necessarily bad or wrong, because you know, people, I have the saying of we should always give people a choice to say no. You know, if there's an option for them to do something, they don't have to do it, and that doesn't mean they're going to burn in hell for eternity. But sure. But it does mean there's an option for them to come. You know, and so I think we need to not condone the reality, but accept the reality that our culture has shifted away from a healthy respect for God and the church. So that's just why I'll launch off the diving board here. I'll turn it over to you guys, see what you think about that.
Well, I'm bummed because if any of my churches listening to this, we just lost our key motivating card. We usually tell people, come to Sunday school or you will burn in hell. So I don't know. It's just going to be a lot harder to get people into the seats.
Yep.
Yeah, you got rid of that. You turned that stone over. No, that's good. That's true. Yeah, definitely changing times, which make it some different kind of challenges than maybe we had in a culture from generation.
Right. And I guess, you know, a question I'd have for you guys, just kind of in conjunction with this question is, you know, before pandemic hit and things got disrupted, you know, what was a normal week for you? Like for us here at Kenai Christian Church, we had we have Sunday morning Bible study. We had a service at 11. We had Sunday evening services, and it was different than the Sunday morning service. You know, it was another Bible study, and then we would have Wednesday night. We'd have a meal, and we'd have a Bible study again. There are women's Bible studies on Thursdays and men's Bible studies on Thursdays, and outside of that, we would have other groups that met. But in general, I mean, we've kept a rhythm, like I said before, of a society that used to respect these sort of times, but now doesn't. You know, thankfully, we see people at each one of those services. But again, what's healthy in that? You know, when it comes to looking out for ourselves and also for the families of our congregation, that's a great question, because you don't want to shortchange, obviously, God on any of this. We also don't want to, you know, there's some people who are going to come out of, the church is going to have to be there sort of mentality. And that's not going to be healthy for them in their homes.
Yeah. I feel like we've experienced some of that here. You know, our church structure, if you will, the calendar piece was Sunday school, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. And the new normal is not going to be the old normal. So when we're talking about Justin's question and rhythm and what should we expect from the church and as far as participation throughout the week, my kind of overall answer here, and then I'll give two applications, is that it's important, I think, to ease back into what I call brick and mortar church. So, and part of it is because the quarantine is lifting gradually. So for us to just get back in and do everything to the same degree and in the same way, it's like that's not happening in any other aspect of society. So why would we do that as a church? So here are a couple things that are important to me and our leadership team here is number one, I think it's important that the rhythm of our church be shaped by the needs of our church. So instead of the leadership team sitting in a room and composing a piece of music and saying, okay, here's the rhythm and here's the beat, and now the church needs to march to that. We sat in a room the other night and we looked at the needs of our church, and then we composed the plan, the piece of music, and then we said, this is what we came up with because we know that this is what our body needs. Mm-hmm. So I think that the rhythm of the church for your church and our church needs to be shaped by the needs of the church. And I mean, I'm just thinking about even last summer when the peninsula was on fire. I mean, nobody got to do it. We were stuck here. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we had last summer and we didn't have a great one. Then we have the pandemic. Now we're going to have an even shorter, a bit of a summer because of what's going on. People are going to want to get outside and play. And I just think that as leadership, if we're not sensitive to that with our people, that's being rough on the sheep. I just don't feel comfortable with that. That grates on me. So it's like Rehoboam when he was going to take over after Solomon and he listened to all of his peers and, you know, raised the taxes even more and we're hard on. There's no reason to do that. So we need to ease back into church life. And one of the things that we're doing is we're canceling Sunday school for the summer. So let's say that I'm going to hell. Sorry. So if everything goes back to normal and that all the mandates are lifted and we can all come back together just fine, no social distancing, no masks, the 20-person crowd control cap is off, and we can come together the first Sunday in June, we're still not going to have Sunday school at 10 a.m. We're going to do, you know, a service from 11 a.m. to 12:15 p.m. Like that's just, and it's going to be combined with kids and adults, because we also know that there's going to be people who are like, I don't feel comfortable enough with coming back yet. So we would break the back of the church by trying to do everything the same way too soon. And the other thing is the rhythm is going to change eventually anyway. So come September, if we embrace this summer calendar piece for our church, this schedule, it's going to change eventually because the needs of the church are going to change. So I don't know if that was helpful for Justin, because I didn't say, okay, yeah, the church should do church for 2 hours a week. I don't think that's what you were looking for anyway. But I think good leadership takes the needs of the body into consideration, and then they put a plan together and then they communicate it.
No, that's well said. I also like the pen in your hand. Was that like, are you going to take some notes, or is this just kind of a tactic you have? Look a little bit more academic.
Yeah. I forgot my monocle actually. So, and last time I didn't have a pen or a notepad. And so I just want you to feel like I'm ready to take notes when you start talking.
Yeah. Pretending. I'm just gonna wave around a $100 bill. I think you're right, and I think, you know, and obviously, you know, we don't dictate, you know, this is a this is a voluntary attendance. You know, we're not, other than bribing them with the gates of Hades, you know, we don't really have any incentive, so we can, but there are going to be the people who feel the pressure, who internally motivated. If the doors are open, they need to be there, you know, and that's often how it works. And so a lot of times, even the amount of things that we are presenting as options can really determine for some people how much they're going to be a part of it. And, you know, I think that's where majoring on the majors, I would rather do a few things very well than do a lot of things poorly.
Preach it.
I am. And I think that, so part of that is then is starting with saying, okay, as a church, what is our vision? You know, obviously really what's God's vision for us as we see it in his word, and maybe specifically for who we are as a people, then focusing on that. And I remember my mentor, Larry, had told me, you know, keep it simple, keep it about two things. I think I might've said this last time, be in the word and be with people. And so how do we sort of narrow things down and say, how do we do a few things well? So like, for example, for our people, and I'm not giving a litmus test for everybody, although everybody should do exactly what we do. You know, I talk about it in three circles.
Hold on, professor.
Yeah, get your notebook out. We have the three circles. We have the big circle for Sunday morning gatherings, the medium circle for a smaller group, some kind of, you know, whether it's a Sunday schoolish thing or a meeting in homes context, and then a small circle where it's a few guys or a few girls getting together, really getting into that confession time, that accountability, memorizing the scripture and stuff together. So for me, it's been, okay, so I'm thinking about, I can't think of things in terms of my week, because I'm a full-time pastor. So I can do things in our church and with staff and different things that, but I'm thinking of the full-time, you know, I'd heard somebody like soccer mom Sally, you know, or oil riggin Oliver or whatever. What can they do on top of their regular work week and in the rhythms of their life, you know? So we want to make that realistic. One of the things that we've said is we don't want anybody involved in something more than two regular nights a week at church. That would be tops. And for some people, it's not even going to be that much, you know? So maybe you're in a Wednesday night ministry helping with kids, and then you're in a small group on another night. That's it. And so we've talked about as pastors, as elders, that means us too. Like, we can't do more. If we're doing four of them and telling other people not to, that's not a good example. That's a poor example. And so how do we, you know, so if I'm going to do that, then I need to do that. And I think about it in terms of on top of, you know, some of my job as a pastor. So I'm in one of those medium circles, one Monday nights, and then me and a couple guys get together early in the morning, because that's usually when you can fit that kind of stuff in before work. Now, you know, week on, week off schedules and, you know, people at the hospital, those things are going to be a little bit different. But so I'm meeting, you know, I've got Sunday morning service. I've got a Monday night home group. I've got a Wednesday morning discipleship group. You know, is that a realistic expectation for everybody? Well, even there, you might have a family with kids in a certain age limit with bedtimes and stuff, where it's like right now in this season, trying to do a home group is not going to work, but maybe there's a different way. That's where we want to give some general principles of things to be involved in, but not to put that kind of legalistic stick on. If you're not doing this exact one, you know, you're not, some of those principles I think have been helpful. What are the few things we want people involved in? And then how do we kind of model that in a weekly rhythm that's sustainable, you know? So
that's good.
Yeah. Let's turn it over to Andrew, P number two.
Actually, it's P3. But.
Well, I was going to move you up the rank. You set your pen down, so you're back down at the bottom.
Well, actually, I've been holding it the whole time.
Oh, there it is. All right, good.
It's fluid. The rankings are fluid.
Yeah, they are. There's actually a poll going on right now. People are sending in their votes, and we're kind of like American Idol.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So it actually took me a little while to think about the question, but I guess I know that as pastors, we're busy, but you know, even if you're listening to this and you're like, I'm not a pastor, I'm not in the ministry, you're still busy. Right? You're working, you're doing the mission, right? Making disciples, whatever that looks like in your life. So my question is, what are some practices or guidelines that maybe you guys have put in place to keep your family the priority? I do see that. I understand. I get it. Like, I understand that, you know, you go to work when you have to go to work. You can't just play all the time. I understand that. But let's say you move on from your ministry, or let's say you move on from your job or whatever, your family goes with you, right? So your family is the priority. So what practices or guidelines are you putting in place, or have you put in place, or should we put in place that help protect our family from our busy schedule? And I know that we're going to speak to that specifically as pastors in the ministry, but maybe there's some broader applications that we can make for our audience as well who aren't pastors. I have a couple, but I'll let you talk, and then I'll, you know, I'm grading you.
Uh-oh. Maybe Justin should go first then.
Oh man, I don't know. I just talked. You have more of a family than I do, so I'm gonna start taking notes on my iPhone since, you know.
Oh, okay.
2020, well, Andrew.
Yeah.
Typing.
You know, first of all, I mean, there might be someone out there listening to this who they're in a part-time ministry, and I just want to say to you, my heart goes out to you. I love you. There's no such thing as part-time ministry. I don't know what it takes for you to protect yourself in that, but if you're in a part-time ministry, you need to somehow find that rhythm and make a clear separation between what that even means. Define that really well, because man, you'll be used to death anyway.
That's a good word.
But for me personally, you know, one thing that I do practically, and I do this every day, obviously we don't have a 9-to-5 clock we punch, you know, and I'm probably, if we're going to be honest, all of us have said, man, if I just had that 9-to-5, I can just check out, I can be done for the day. And it's just in those times of life where things are just incredibly busy and you feel like you're a stranger in your own house. But there's a beauty in it too, because then we're not strapped to, well, I've got to leave right now. or I have to be gone. Think about our slope workers, our guys, guys and gals who are doing the shift work and they're gone for 2 weeks and back for one or whatever. But for me, one thing that I do is I get up in the morning with my boys and we spend the morning together. I make them breakfast. Sometimes it's really very easy breakfast to make, like in cereal. And I allow my wife the time to just get ready for the day. You know, they don't have access. Well, they have access to her. They're not like she's in a hidden closet or something. But her morning routine is not interrupted by myself or by my boys running in there and needing more milk or the TV's not working or whatever. And we just spend that morning together every morning. And it's funny, Justin, you mentioned this about guys having to get together early. So many times I've been invited to these like 6 a.m. breakfast or 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. whatever meetings. And I, you know, I just say, guys, no. I said, I mm-hmm. spend my mornings with my family because the rest of my day is going to be all over the chart. I don't even know what the day is going to hold for me. I know what I have on my list to do, but you know, it just takes one text or email or phone call for that whole thing to be, to go off or someone just to walk into your office, you know? And so, you know, for me, it's not real intimate time with them necessarily. It's not like we're having this great devotional moment. I mean, I'm serving. In fact, I joke around that I don't sit down. I'm just walking. I'm go to the door, let the dog out, come back, refill some cereal or making French toast or whatever. But I really appreciate that because I realize what that's providing for my wife, because she's going to spend the rest of the day, because my wife homeschools our children. She's going to spend the rest of the day and the rest of the evening with them. And really for her, that's really her time just for herself. And I want to protect that for her, you know, and I don't want to ever feel like, well, it's 8:30. I got to run out of here. I have to be at the office at a certain time. Mm. And obviously there's exceptions to that too. But that is one thing that I've done consistently to protect myself and yeah. protect my family in that.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, I think, you know, and I think, you know, it's a good word, Adam. That's why I love talking to guys. You know, Jill and I just got married last year. We do not have children at this point. You know, and just the different seasons of life are really going to, and everybody's in a different place. And I think that's important to make those caveats, you know, that we understand. Number one, everybody that's listening is in a different home situation. You might mm-hmm. be a single person. You might have young children. You might have children out of the house. You may be in a divorce situation. So we recognize that and recognize, you know, we're putting some ideas out. Hopefully we never come across like we've got it all together. Hopefully yeah. you know, we're learning from our mistakes together. And so we just know, I mean, sometimes you'll listen to these how-to guides or whatever, and you come away going, oh my goodness. You know, and so we recognize there's grace. We're all learning through failure, probably more than through success. But one of my favorite books I read early on, I mean, I've been pastoring for 5 minutes, but it's called the Contemplative Pastor, Eugene Peterson. Ooh. I say contemplative because I think that sounds more like the word contemplate, but I guess contemplative sounds more snotty. But anyway, I love it. The book is so, he is not snotty. He's down to earth. He's real. Talks a lot about what our union with God looks like and his first chapter is called The Unbusy Pastor. And so I'm going to kind of answer this question indirectly, but it'll get there. And I love one of the most helpful things that early on was hearing him say, there are two reasons that a pastor is busy. The first reason is because we are vain. He said, we are, and this one hit me over the head, but he said, you know, we long to be important and significant. And again, this applies to everybody, not just pastors. But what better way to validate who we are than busyness? If you went to a doctor's office and there was nobody in the waiting room, you know, the doctor's in there playing Sudoku, you're like, okay, you know, this guy obviously doesn't have anybody. So for us, there is this feeling of like, oh, all these people, you know, are calling me and need me and, you know, whatever it might be. And that can be an easy way. It kind of feeds our ego. And so we can give into that. You know, we want to be busy because it validates what we're doing, right? And the money that we receive. Then the second reason he said the busy pastor is the vain pastor, but then also the busy pastor is the lazy pastor. And that actually at first sounds counterintuitive, where you go, you know, you'd think that the busy pastor is the you know, very much anything but lazy, but said basically you're allowing other people to decide what you do. Mm-hmm. What the lazy way is to not be able to say no and just kind of go with the flow. And that's one, I think, hardest things, we're going to get to that in Adam's question, but learning when to say no. And otherwise what happens is that it's the next request is the next thing you do. So if somebody wants to talk, or they need counseling, or they want to start a new program they want to talk to you about, or this thing's not working right, or that thing. And so before you know it, you've been yanked around all day and you didn't get to some of the things that you were actually needing to get to as well. And so one of the things that he talked about of not being lazy would be to set goals, make priorities, and then be in charge of your schedule. And part of that is involving blocking out times. Like for me, it's blocking out most mornings. I'm saying when I get into the office around 8 o'clock until noon, I'm doing my sermon prep. You know, that's when my mind's the sharpest, and, you know, I'm going to block it out, and we'll talk about emergencies in a minute. But, you know, maybe for you, it's, hey, Wednesday afternoons, I'm going to spend some time in prayer, just me and the Lord, or me and some other leaders at our church or whatever it might be. So that's a blocked out time, you know, and if somebody says, hey, could I get together with you Wednesday at 1 o'clock? Sorry, you know, that's not open in my schedule. And that's so right. The importance of blocking things out. And so I take that full circle to our families. The best thing we can do is block out. We have office hours, and we say, when I'm at home, I'm going to be fully at home. I mean, Adam, I love hearing you say that. I'm at home with my family this morning. I'm not doing a meeting. I'm not answering 1,000 emails. I'm present, you know? And so we need to be able to set boundaries. And we know ministry isn't that neat 9 to 5, as we mentioned, but you know, there are going to be, we have to set some of those boundaries in place. Otherwise it will swallow us whole, and we won't have time for our family, which really is the priority, as Andrew mentioned.
That's good. Yeah. No, basically the broader application is protect family time. Mm-hmm. And treat it as sacred. Block it off and protect it. Yeah. One of the things that I do practically on my day off, Monday's my day off. So I keep my phone off. If I turn my phone on, it's because, you know, Christy, you know, she's out, she's went somewhere. So I turn it on just in case she's got an emergency. But other than that, my phone stays off. It's not like I can do a whole lot on it anyway.
I was going to say, we joke about that actually being a calculator. So is that one of those solar powered ones?
This thing was cool like 10 years ago, though. It was cool at one point.
Sure.
Turn it away from the sun and it'll be off.
Yeah. It starts to smoke when too many texts come in at once.
Right.
Yeah. Do you turn the pager off also?
But no, Adam, you were going to say something? Say again?
Oh, no. I was asking if you turned your pager off also. Or just the BlackBerry.
2-in-1. Not the same size. So, yeah, protecting family times, and just a practical way of doing that is turn that phone off. I try to do that also as much as I can in the evenings. I understand that there's going to be some exceptions to that. If I sometimes I schedule a call with some folks later in the evening because that's when they get off work. We need to talk about something, or they've asked to talk with me. But most evenings I turn my phone off and just go put it up in my room so that it's not around where I can, let me turn it back on real quick. Those are some practical ways. Those things help me stay present. So when I'm looking at my kids, I'm really looking into their eyes. I'm not, you know, glazed over and thinking about that or that. Mm. I mean, and it's always a challenge. It's not like, oh, my phone's up in my room, I'm totally focused. I understand it's difficult, but
yeah.
I mean, I glaze over a lot. I've glazed over most of this episode. I don't even know what you guys have been talking about.
I could tell. That pen went away a long time ago, which I don't know. It's something about when you're talking, there's some kind of feedback I'm noticing. I don't know.
When I'm talking?
Yeah. I don't know if it's.
I think it's a zipper. It's hitting a zipper or something there.
Is it this mic on here?
Probably.
Sorry.
Maybe that's rubbing against the zipper. It's all right. Luckily I caught it like, you know, 40 minutes into the podcast, but everybody's turned it off now. What is going on? I don't know.
Okay.
I was trying to isolate the variable, and I was like, I think we isolated the variable.
I'll get, different set of headphones next time.
You just drop back down to P3, just so you know.
That's right.
Like, don't make me drop you to P4, even though we don't have four people.
Yeah, I will find a pastor. I'll drag him off the streets. All right. Well, last question, Mr. Myers.
One more thing real quick on that one. Like you said earlier, you know, we don't have it figured out. We're not perfect. I'm going to be real transparent here.
about the only thing that I have going right in my protection of my family and the healthy rhythms is that morning time, which is probably why I'm so, such a stickler on it. But I'll be honest, you know, I've gone to pastor conferences, I've gone to marriage conferences, and just different things that you hear while you listen to other podcasts or whatever. And the thing I'm most guilty of is I don't have a healthy rhythm with just my wife and I. Mm. So we don't have, you know, I hear people like, you know, you have to date your wife once a week. I'm like, I'd like to date my wife twice a year. That'd be great. You know? And we have, and it's nothing, you know, it's not like we're trying to avoid one another, but when we find ourselves so immersed in, and we've mentioned this already, you know, not everyone's a pastor. We have home lives. Well, guess what? Pastors have home lives also, and they have schedules, and you're running from one event to the next and everything else. And man, I tell you what, it's one of those things that I constantly try to figure out as to make that again a priority. And about the time I get it figured out, something else will come along and interfere with that. I mean, there's something I've talked with people about is you get invited to something, right? We have a lot of exposure to a lot of people and a lot of things. And when you're invited to these things, they're not bad. I mean, there's a billion birthday parties you can go to. There are people who want you to join their cause or their group or whatever. And, you know, they're like, well, it's not a big deal. It's just once a month. Well, if you do once a month, four times a month, guess what? You filled up just about every week with something else in addition to what you're already doing.
Yeah.
And these are the sort of things that I start, you know, having to reevaluate. You know, I don't want to start something and back out of it because I went, wait a minute, I'm in over my head here. But I have not protected my just alone time with my wife, you know, just the two of us getting time away to talk. And again, we do spend good time together as a family at home and stuff. But that's important. You know, I think it's very important. You know, we've been married 23 years and you do, you know, I think about you, Justin, and where you guys are at as newlyweds, and there are going to be different rhythms and patterns of life. Mm-hmm. And what we all say, the first step is acknowledging that there's a problem. Mm-hmm. So I've publicly acknowledged mine. So you guys can hold me accountable to find out when is the next time I took my wife on a date.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just something I want to throw out there as a reality. I don't have it all figured out, mm-hmm. but I did listen to, I'm probably gonna get this wrong, but I think it was an Andy Stanley video. But whoever it was, the main takeaway was a no now is not a no forever, and a yes now is not a yes forever. And it sounds like very simple, but it has really helped me in talking with people, because sometimes you feel like you're saying no. One, you're afraid, well, they're gonna leave the church now because I told them no, or they're not gonna be my friend, or they're not gonna invite me to this ever again. And so I've just learned to say, hey, look, I can't do that right now, but you know, check back with me in 6 months or a year or whatever. Yeah.
That's good. No, I appreciate your honesty and vulnerability in that. And I think there's probably a lot of people nodding their heads right now as they're listening to you sharing that.
Yeah. So make sure our wives don't listen to this episode. Okay.
Right, exactly. No, you're right. It is hard enough even just without children, man, you know, people are wanting to, especially early on, new pastor's wife. I was still a lot of new people in the church, and people wanting to have you over for dinner. And it felt sort of self-important, but it was like, you know what? We had decided this year, we're like, we're going to do one of those a month, you know, and we're having to tell some people it might be a few months before we are able to get together. And here's why, you know, and just being honest with them. And everybody respected that. And if they didn't, we just kicked them out of the church. It was great.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you read the Bible? Let your yes be yes and your no be no. That never works.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. Yeah. Well, Adam, last question is yours, brother.
Yeah. So let me look at this question again. All right. So as we're talking about these rhythms and them not getting interrupted and things, when a crisis happens in someone in the church's life, you know, how do you gauge that crisis as needing immediate attention? Like you've got to drop everything you're doing right now and go. Mm. Or how do you assess it as, it is a crisis. I see that. I hear what you're saying. but you have to stick with maybe some of the things that you protected, like the morning breakfast or the once a night or once a month date night, whatever. What do you guys think?
Justin. Oh, okay. And he's got a pencil, so he's written right now. But seriously, is this better?
That's good.
Because I unzipped my jacket a little bit. Okay.
You nailed it.
All right. Sorry about that.
And better ventilation anyway.
Yeah. I have two benchmarks on this, how to filter if a crisis is a crisis. Number one, one benchmark that I use is if the crisis can go through the proper channels in the church, right? Or let me say it this way. If it can't go through the proper channels, then it's probably a crisis. So when and this is something that I have to teach the church, right? So every pastor is going to be a little different and how they're going to do things. And this is something I've had to slowly teach the church, and it's filtered in, trickled down into the culture of the church. So we have deacons that serve here. And so I can create these channels through which things could go. So if there are needs that our church people, like people in the church have, then they go and talk to Rob Pereira. I love Rob. Great guy. They go talk to Rob. They don't talk to me. And Rob can then take care of that, and he can take them through the proper channels. Or our secretary, or somebody else that is in a position of maybe a ministry role. If it comes straight to me, then more than likely it's a crisis, because the other proper channels could not take care of it for whatever reason. So I think by just setting up a system of proper channels, like Moses at some point couldn't listen to a million and a half people. He had to set up people, right? That everything had to go through a proper channel. And it doesn't mean that we don't think that those people are important. In fact, quite the opposite. Because we want to meet their needs, we establish multiple people that can care for them quicker than I would be able to, or that you'd be able to.
Yeah.
So that's the first benchmark. If it can't go through the proper channels right away, if the proper channels can't take care of it, it's probably a crisis. At least it needs to come to me. And the other benchmark is, and I learned this from somebody in the church who runs a business. And the second benchmark that I use is that I have set up a very specific voicemail in order to vet people who really need to get a hold of me. So in my voicemail, if you've called me and you, and I know that there's going to be some folks in our church that are listening to this, so now they're going to hear my secret, but that's okay. I don't want them to be offended. But again, this wasn't even, I didn't even learn this from another pastor. I learned this from a business owner in our church. Mm-hmm. My voicemail basically says, please leave me a very specific message so that I know how to return your call. I never promised to return the call, first of all. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I don't want to, but I don't say I will call you back. So the way that I have set it up is if they call me and they don't leave a voicemail, apparently they didn't really need to communicate with me. They didn't even leave a voicemail. If they leave a voicemail and they just go, hey, this is Justin. I just think you're the coolest pastor in the world, and I would love to just, you know, pick your brain and then click. Okay.
Wise congregant.
I already knew it was you that called. I don't need you to leave your name. So if they don't leave a voicemail, or the voicemail, they don't tell me what they want to talk about, I can go, that's not a crisis. Mm-hmm. If they call me and say, listen, I really need you to call me within like the hour, and here's why, here's what's going on, then I know. So just having the voicemail set up that way, I don't promise to call people back. And I tell them, you need to let me know. And here's the cool thing about this. And I won't use the name here, but there is a person that when I was here early, like Justin, I've been pastoring for 5 minutes too. Okay. But when I was here with my first year, I had a person call me over and over through the week, and I did not know how to deal with that. And then this guy in the church told me how to do it. And I felt really bad when I didn't answer this person's call. And I felt really bad when they said, hey, this is so-and-so, please give me a call back. And I didn't call them back because it wasn't an emergency. And the funny thing is, eventually that individual has gone on to own a business for themselves, and they do the same thing now. So when I call them, it's voicemail. So it feels bad at first, like, but the voicemail vets out whether or not it's a crisis or not. So proper channels and a very specific voicemail. Those are my two tools.
That's good.
So if I see Justin Collin, I'm not going to.
No, bottom of the barrel. I get it. That's good. A good word of delegation, you know, that it not only, I mean, maybe it is an emergency, but it may not be you the one that's going to be the one to be there for them. Probably a good healthy practice in general. And I think in general, I mean, there's an aspect. I mean, if the question is this an actual crisis? What do we allow? So we're assuming we're in some kind of a rhythm. We're studying for our sermon. We are in maybe even some other kind of meeting or, you know, whatever it might be that we're doing. Or we're outside of office hours. When do we know when we act on that or not? Which there's an element to that. And I don't mean this as a cop-out, but, you know, prayer is an aspect. I mean, if we belong to him, and especially as people, because, you know, we all have people in our lives who are going to cry out to us and help, not just pastors. So how to discern when to, you know, heed that call, I think is an important place to start. One way I've said it often is, and I wouldn't say this to the person, but in my head, your emergency is not my emergency. And I don't mean that in a callous way, but what I mean by that is everybody who's coming to you, clearly they think it's an emergency. Otherwise they wouldn't be coming to you, you know? And I would say two things, and alliteration game. So I would say we treat them with compassion, but not with codependency. So compassion meaning I don't want to be apathetic regardless of how I respond. I want to make sure I'm listening. I care. We weep with those who weep. You know, we don't want to discard somebody, and just minimalize them. And yet I know, like we were talking about earlier, the vain pastor who needs to be validated by their busyness. I think our codependency, I can, it's easy for me to develop a savior complex and to think like, oh, people need me, you know? And so there's sort of this cycle of they're asking for my help and, oh, it's an emergency. And how much do we love that? You know, I got the call, I got to go, you know? And right. You know, the big, you know, they send up the pastor signal and away we fly. And the reality is, I would say 95% of the things are not actual emergencies. Most of the time it can be, hey, let's get together. I want to hear you, but I actually want to create some space where I can hear you. And, you know, somebody will come into my office, because the hard thing is someone comes into your office and you're going, you know, they're there, and I'll tell them, you know, I'll be honest. I'll say, I've got 5 minutes, you know, I've got 5 minutes, and you got, or hey, you know, real quick, what's it about? And let's get together for coffee, or let's, you know, and we kind of put something down the road or delegate like Andrew mentioned. And so what I call them is, on mission distractions. What's something that, you know, that is still what we're called to do, but it's a distraction from what I was called to do. So an example for me would have been, I got a call once sitting right here at this desk. It was early in the morning, and lady in our church, her husband had just killed himself. And when she called me, she had just discovered his body. That's an easy one. You know, you didn't, oh, well, let's talk, you know, in 2 days. No, I'm on the way. So there, I think we know for the most part, there's a spirit led intuitiveness that says this has to be dealt with now. Things of those natures. But then, you know, another example for me was, there was a woman who called me once in tears. Her home life was not good. I didn't really know any of the background. This was my first year. And it was like an hour and a half conversation. I'm giving her advice. She's crying. She's telling me about all these things that are going on. And I, especially as a woman, I pointed her towards some other women in the church that'd be great to talk to, you know, kind of pivoted that. Well, then a week later she called, and it was the exact same thing, and hadn't heard anything I had said, hadn't tried any of the steps I had. And I quickly realized she just wants an ear. She doesn't want a solution. And so I realized quickly, I think like 10% of our church could take 90% of our time if we let them. And so what I did in this particular instance is I would let those go to voicemail, like Andrew was talking about the voicemail. And I found I in a day or two later, I would send her a text or, you know, a redirect, you know, hey, praying for you. And that would kind of, that didn't have to respond right away. If I answer the call or immediately respond, now we've developed a routine.
Codependency.
Yes, exactly. And so that's for many reasons, not super helpful. And so, you know, I've really found that being able to set up those boundaries with some people and assess, you know what, this is just not, this is not going to be productive. They just want to complain, they even legitimate hurts. But until they're ready to make some changes, you know, it's like I gotta draw those boundary lines. So those are some principles that helped me.
Yeah, and I think for me early on in ministry, I had that very same feeling where, you know, especially when someone's perceiving that they're in a crisis, and in their world, they are in a crisis, mm-hmm. and they pull you into this moment, and you're like, man, like you said, put the cape on, here we go. And I had a discussion with someone who was like appalled at me, and I said, how do you handle these things, you know? And it's Robert, who's the founding minister here. How do you handle these things? He's like, you know, a lot of these things, what feels like it needs immediate response. He goes, that same emotion, that same difficulty, it's going to be here tomorrow too. Mm-hmm. You know, so if there's something that's happening, you know, unless it's a life or death situation, you know, someone's on deathbed and they may lose their life in an hour or so, you're going to respond. But mostly everything else. And again, we have thankfully the discernment, the Holy Spirit to figure some of these things out on the fly. I guess for me, I'm one of those people who wants everyone to be at peace. And so I'm fighting for that for everyone. And so it goes against my nature to not just intercede and help them. Mm-hmm. But I did learn very quickly that the longer you stay in ministry, the more crises that are going to come your way. And as I've put into practice these wise words of, you know, give it some time, you know, respond to them. And I love what you said, respond to them in compassion, but don't have the codependency that's enabled there. Because that problem is going to be there. And sometimes what's even great, people learn that they can solve that moment on their own, or with the help of someone else. Mm-hmm. Because one of the unhealthy patterns that I think most of us are trying to break is this, I'll call it a clergy mentality, where, you know, if someone's sick and in the hospital for whatever reason, and people from the church just flood the room, but we as the lead pastor don't, then none of the other ones mattered. It's like, well, those do matter. Those are valid, because if you're going to be frustrated by someone, a brother or sister in Christ who's come to visit you, and you negate their visit because it wasn't Adam or it wasn't Justin or it wasn't Andrew, you know, that cuts both ways. You know, there might be reasons we couldn't go, and they're very valid. And so you don't want to shortchange your brothers and sisters in Christ who are pouring into your life, and helping people understand that, man, we are in this together. We are a family. We got each other's backs. And anyway, so yeah, that's been what I've learned over the years with the crisis question. So
yeah, that's a good word. Yeah. Be the same. It'll be there tomorrow. Today has enough troubles of its own. Man, appreciate that. Some helpful thoughts for me. I don't know. Andrew, did you write anything down on your pad?
I actually knew it all already.
Got it.
Well, I think you wrote a book on it right behind you.
No, I did. I did. I drew the picture. I drew the three circles.
Oh, look at that.
These are some squiggly lines.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some hieroglyphics.
Yeah. Pretended like you were listening during the glazing. Yeah, that's great. We wanted to end here with a new segment we're calling the Recommendation Room. And so we thought, just as an encouragement to people, obviously this is now your favorite resource, but beyond us, asking each other, what are you listening to? What are you reading? What are you watching that's been an encouragement to you that somebody else might find likewise? So Andrew, we'll start with you. What would you recommend? Sure.
Man, I got a lot of options here. I brought a couple of books, but I'll just show you one. Ooh. This is called, hopefully you can see it the right way from your...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're good.
Ranger's Apprentice. Mm-hmm. The Ranger's Apprentice by John Flanagan. So,
Is that the last Hunger Games?
No.
Okay.
No, The Ranger's Apprentice. I read through that. I finally finished the last book. There's like 11 in the series. A guy in the church who's really wise said, you need to read for fun. Cause I would be like, it's stupid to read for fun. And so, to me, I had a perspective like it's a waste of time. I'm going to read theology, right? I'm going to read Screwtape Letters, right? I'm reading that right now too, you know? And he's like, you need to rest your brain and your heart. You need to read for fun. So I started reading for fun.
And my son actually read all 11 books like 4 times through before I finished it 1 time through. But these are actually great books. Tons of fun, like Robin Hood kind of type of stuff. I don't know. It's just fun. It's enjoyable. I think people would enjoy it. Adults, kids alike. So that's my suggestion. It's a recommendation. Have fun with it. You're giving me this smile over here.
I am enjoying your recommendation, and I get nothing but scorn for my enjoyment.
Yeah, that's what I recommend.
Yeah. Hey, I'm not here to throw stones. You should see. I have a bookshelf full of Dr. Seuss books. So
I did see those on one of your devotionals, actually.
Yeah.
So
it's good.
That's awesome.
Adam, what do you recommend?
I just recommend that people read the Bible. You know, if they have a problem with that.
Oh, went with the easy answer. You went with the easy answer.
Yeah. Yeah,
I didn't know there were other books.
But in the original Greek, Hebrew, and especially right. Aramaic. So,
yep. And when the one that God wrote in, the 1611, right?
Exactly. I just had to get that out there. So, I'm going to recommend something that I haven't even participated in. Because okay. I signed up for it. I know, how odd does that sound?
Yeah.
But there's a webinar coming up, and it's called Disrupt. Hmm. And I had signed up for it before the pandemic hit, because their idea was, how do we minister in the digital age? You know, how do we use podcasts? How do we use whether we live stream or, you know, put devotions online? How do we meet people where they are with social media? What's the best use of social media and groups? Because obviously we want to speak the language of the culture. And if we say, well, social media is the stupidest thing ever, well, it might be, but it is the language of their culture. And so somehow we have to speak that language. And so I signed up for the seminar, and then the pandemic hit, literally like right after they had launched the signups. So it's a free webinar. I don't have the web address, but if you type in Church Disrupt, I believe the company who's putting on is called Pushpay. Mm-hmm. There's actually an app. You can download the app on your phone, Android or iPhone, or I don't think they have a BlackBerry yet. But you can download the app and you can sign up for that. It happens on May the 13th. So it's like next Wednesday, I believe.
Hmm.
But I thought, man, the timeliness of it, you know, and I don't think there's always, you know, God's timing involved in these things. And here's this big push for this to come out to help people. And now we're all going, you know, please help me understand what I'm doing with this Zoom and live. I mean, we're doing ours with, you know, on a shoestring budget with equipment we don't even have yet, you know? So I'm looking forward to that. And I hope it's not a flop, because that's just what I've just promoted. Some amazing thing that stinks.
Right.
But I'll let you know next time, because no one else is there, how it went.
Instead of the reading rainbow, you don't have to take my word for it. It's you actually can't take my word for it.
Yeah, you can't take my word for it. They have an amazing advertising about that campaign. Show.
Yeah.
Man.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I'm a big podcast junkie. One of the reasons I've always been into radio. And I feel like now podcasts are like the new version of old man talk radio, you know, instead of just turning on the AM dial to, you know, NPR. Yeah. Now we're listening to one of my favorites. It's called Knowing Faith. It's from the Village Church in Texas. And it's Jen Wilkin, who's a fantastic Bible teacher, and a couple of guys who she blows away. But they're talking about just kind of all things. I mean, theology. They're usually walking through a book of the Bible their church is teaching through. But they're funny. I love their back and forth. They take them. You know, I've heard it said, people who take God seriously but don't take themselves too seriously. And that, they're a good example of that. And so, really enjoy. They can go deep and get into it, but they also are having a good time with each other. So, Knowing Faith is one of my favorites. Also, one called the 200 Churches Podcast, which is a couple pastors who just
Jeff and Johnny.
Yeah. Their weekly podcast. I mean, 90% of America is 200 people or less in their churches. So it's just it's a reach out to those people, you know, in those contexts. They are a fantastic resource as well. A lot of helpful, practical stuff, both, especially just kind of, they're kind of pastors kind of people. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that. And, So yeah, that's, and then reading, I'm like Andrew. I like having the rhythms. I usually am at all times reading a fiction, a nonfiction, but also not like directly, biblical, but then, I mean, not anti-biblical, but it's not about, specifically about the Bible. And then something more overtly Christian. So like right now I'm reading Les Miserables. I'd never read that before. And so I'm reading the abridged version. It's like 350 pages. I wasn't quite ready for the 1500 page one, but it's really good. I'm enjoying that
in
one.
In French?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, good.
Obviously in the original, it was also written in 1611. And then reading The History of Philosophy by Will Durant, which is actually, it's an easier to read philosophy book. Looking at some of the major philosophers starting kind of back in the Socrates age and then moving forward. And then, the one that I've just started and really enjoyed it, is called Letters to the Church by Francis Chan.
Read
that one, man, just, yep. And he always is, but just what a encouragement he is to the church. Somebody who, man, just the way that he talks about God, the way he talks about following him together, just a convicting and encouraging, read as always. And so I would really recommend, jumping into that. The marriage one, You and Me Forever, is really good as well. If you haven't read that one.
Yes.
So yeah, I would recommend.
Well, let me throw one out there. I only brought one because you said one. You like listed like 10. a book that I just read and I actually started recommending to our church to read, and like everybody in our church is actually buying it and reading it. I was like kind of surprised. Who stole My Church? Who Stole My Church by Gordon MacDonald.
Okay.
You need to get that book.
Did you find out the answer to who did steal your church? Was it the Hamburglar?
I can't tell you.
Okay.
Oh my goodness.
There you have it.
That's good, a good stuff. Book. It's kind of funny. Some of these books like that, Who Stole My Church? It was actually recommended to me by another pastor. And then a different pastor in town let me borrow his edition. So I read it. I'm like, why aren't we telling the people in our churches to read these books? Because you're reading this book, you're like, I mean, it's great for a pastor to read it, but actually, if more like people in the church would read these books, fewer of these kinds of books would be being written. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
So anyway, I threw it out there, and people in our church are getting it on Audible or their Kindle, or they're ordering it online. And people are like, man, this is a great book. So, Who Stole My Church by Gordon MacDonald. Yeah.
All right. Is that the follow-up to Who Stole the Cookie from the Cookie Jar? Is that the same series? I didn't know. No, I think you're right. And I think a lot of what my hope is here, you know, is we're talking pastor to pastor to pastor. And we hope to be an encouragement to pastors, but really just let people into our world. And I mean, like we've said, we hope to encourage everybody. And so, yeah, we don't need to create this clergy laity distinction. We are the church. And so you know, as we're all disciple makers, I just want us to all, I mean, that's our vocation, but and we're all on the same mission. So,
well, I feel like I've like slipped down to P3, having not given more resources. I'm going to try to regain P2 by recommending a book that I think every Christian should read, regardless of where you're at. And it's a Mark Batterson book, In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day, which is a very strange title, but that book is phenomenal. He has a follow-up to it, Chase the Lion. And man, they will get you to embrace your walk with Christ and just run with him. And then a podcast. I have a really good friend of mine who he lives in Thailand. He's in the front lines of fighting human trafficking. And he just started a podcast called Guy Stuff, S-C-H-T-U-F-F, Guy Stuff. And their goal, you talk about goofy as far as like content and interaction with one another. John Espy he's hilarious. And, but their goal is to say, you know, guys, let's get real with one another. Let's be godly men. Let's throw off the facade and let's embrace biblical manlyhood and let's just be real about it in our conversations. And so they literally just launched this week, and I was listening to their podcast today. I already love it, but really cool logo, good name. But there's one for a podcast to hear about it. And they've talked about, they're bringing people in. They've got some Christian and I know this is going to rub people the wrong way, but I'm going to say it anyway, some Christian MMA fighters who are professional MMA fighters, but they love Jesus. So they're hitting people for the Lord. And so
like the Crusades.
Exactly. And so they've got people that are interviewing that have come from all walks of life, but I mean, just guys that used to sit there and go, whoa, man, that's awesome. So there's my two. Hopefully I've maybe bumped up to P2 again, but I might just be kind of lingering there.
P2.5.
There you go.
You're hovering. You're making some. When I was a bad influence on you guys. I just opened the doors and started recommending every single thing that I've ever read or listened to, just through the kitchen sinks. I'm like, I don't think we're gonna ever have a.
Yeah. My favorite show. Bubble bath. If you're how to relax and
lavender. Toasted coconut. I was joking about that. The church.
Okay.
I love the scents when it's like Bath and Body Works. Like the warm apple pie. How does it specifically smell warm? That's not a smell. It's a temperature. Come on.
That one smells like it's just out of the fridge.
Yeah. Well, I think we've officially run our any sort of profitability streak to a close.
Run on fumes, man.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Let's thank our advertisers. Thanks so much, Bath & Body Works, for
plug Bath & Body Works, Dunder Mifflin, the Baltimore Orioles, and...
sponsors.
Adam's got... you don't even have any. Your sponsor was...
I know. I'm going to have to... I'll go for the...
The
Assassin's Creed. This shout out to the video games today.
I thought that was maybe your favorite Christian MMA fighter look.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's a much better one.
Well, we've had a good time today. Appreciate you guys, and thanks everybody for tuning in. We will, like we said, we can find this on iTunes or a podcast app, also on our YouTube page. Share it with those local, and hopefully it translates to those nation and globally. If you know somebody on Mars that will be encouraged by this, pass that along intergalactically as well. Gentlemen, it's a privilege. It's brothers fighting a good fight together. And for Pastor Adam and Pastor Andrew, I'm Pastor Justin from Peninsula Grace Center. We're just glad to be with you all. And we love you guys. Let's follow Jesus together.
That's right. Take care, everyone.